Yes. And very much. That was on April the 9th, 1994, when, after the government that has been beheaded on April the 6th, a new government was put up, and they sent me some soldiers to come and evacuate me from my house, take me to the hotel, because they had taken over the hotel where I was a general manager, and all the hotel keys for the many rooms which were not occupied the previous night when I left on the 6th, I had kept them in my office. Many stores keys were in my office. Many other sellers keys were in my office. So when they took over the hotel, they had no other alternative than sending soldiers to come pick me up, bring me to the hotel. Everything went very well until a time when we took off from my house in a mile away, not on the hotel compound, as you have seen on the screen in Hotel Rwanda, just a mile away. I saw those guys, 20 soldiers in two jeeps, pulling to the side of the road, and all of them, they had been very kind with me all over. And that time, I saw everyone jumping out of the jeeps and everyone pointing his gun on my head. I knew that those guys were not joking, because all along the street, there were so many dead bodies. Some of them, their heads cut off, others, bellies opened, mutilated, and yet, all of those people were very well known to us. We had been staying in that neighborhood for 7 years. We knew each and everyone, and each and everyone knew us. The very same captain who was the leader of that team came to me and told me that, listen, you traitor, we are not killing you today, but have this gun and kill all of your cockroaches in these cars. I looked at him, and just like a few minutes ago, I stayed speechless for 5 minutes. After 5 minutes of looking at him, watching him, I told him that, listen, my friend, myself, I do not know how to use guns, but even if I knew, I do not see any reason why I could kill this old man. There was an old man, Michelle, who was my neighbor. On day one of the genocide, I already had 26 neighbors who came to stay in my house. And when I was evacuated, that day I was with them. So I pointed out that old man and told him that, listen, my friend, I don't see any good reason I can kill this old man. Are you sure that this old man is the right person we are fighting today? There was another young lady, also a neighbor, holding her baby, her second daughter, who was 3 months old. I pointed out that baby again and told that young captain that, listen, my friend, I do not think that the enemy we are fighting today is this baby who does not know anything about what is going on. Sometimes you have to treat people according to their ego. Touch that sensitive point of life. I told them that, listen, you guys, I do understand you. You guys are hungry, thirsty, tired, stressed by this world. But such problems, we can solve them otherwise. We can find other solutions. Then we started finding other solutions. And after 2 long hours, they drove us up to the Diplomat Hotel. And I went to my office. I went to the safe, just took some money and paid what I had promised. That day, I was scared and very much. Many times, people look at me and tell me that, listen, you have made so many decisions. What toughest decision have you ever made in your life? On May 2nd, 1994, in the afternoon, the United Nations executives who had remained behind because all the UN soldiers had been evacuated, and they only left us with 260 souls during the genocide. They pulled out and took more than 2,000 soldiers, left us with 200. So a few executives who were working with those soldiers, the rebels army and the regular army, the Rwandan army, had been sitting together trying to find a way to exchange refugees, the Mikurin refugees, with the refugees who were in the National City Stadium, the National City Stadium being controlled by the rebels and the Mikurin by the army. That day, that May 2nd, list came out in the afternoon, and all my family members' names came almost first on the list. Then that day when my family members, all of them came to on the list, including myself. Most of the Mikurin refugees came to me and told me that, listen, please, tell us, are you really going to leave this place tomorrow? I said, no. If you are going to leave this place, tell us so that we can go to the roof of the hotel and jump. Our problem was no more to die, but how to die. Were we going to afford to be tortured? Killers were coming, cutting a hand, going and coming after many hours, cutting the other one, coming again after some other hours, cutting a leg, torturing their victims. So they told me that if you are leaving, there is no way we can afford to be tortured like that. Please tell us so that we can go to the roof of the hotel and jump. I told them, listen, my friends, I'm not leaving. No one could believe me. No one. That night, I went to sleep at a very late hour. But I was a very disturbed person because I had made a decision I wouldn't wish to make any more in my life. I had decided to send my wife, my children, where, with what hope to survive? None. Remain behind, doing what? Nothing. Without any hope to meet them, to see them anymore. I went to sleep at 1 a.m. the following morning. When I went to sleep at 1, I was used to that, to go to sleep so late, phoning the international community, sending faxes all over the world, disturbing each and everyone, because in any case, I had nothing to lose. So when I arrived in the room, my wife and children were playing, not sleeping at all. But they noticed that I had changed. That change, they saw it in my face. Each and everyone were just looking at me, but they couldn't understand. I said, it's okay, I'm tired. Then I tried to find courage to tell my wife and children that I'm not being evacuated with them. But I couldn't. Until a time when I decided to pretend that my children were not there. And I told my wife that, listen, tomorrow you are going to be evacuated. When I said that word, that you are going to be evacuated, each and everyone looked at me, and in a joint voice almost, they told me that, listen, you are saying us. How about you? Aren't you coming with us? I said, no. Today, my advisor, my own conscience, has told me not to leave these people. Because if I happen to leave today, and these people are killed, I would never be a free man. I would be a prisoner of my own conscience. Please to accept, leave, and go to a safer place without any hope of meeting anymore. The following day in the afternoon, I escorted, in the evening actually, around 5, I escorted my wife and my children. I just helped them to climb into the UN trucks. I saw them all. That experience itself was heartbreaking. I have never suffered that much in my life to see them off. I watched them leaving the first truck, the second one, the third, the fourth. As the last truck was just crossing the hotel main gate, the radio, the media, the radio was reading the names of all the people fleeing and being evacuated from the Mikolin Hotel, urging militia men to set up roadblocks, stop all those Mikolin cockroaches, and kill them. Because the radio was saying, if you don't kill them, if you forgive them, they will never forgive you. Well, those people couldn't make it for more than 2 miles. They were stopped, beaten to death. Until a time when they started killing them, and the first bullet from a militia man killed a soldier. Then soldiers and militia men started fighting each other. Soldiers saying that militia men are killing us. That is the only way. The few UN soldiers who were driving them, who had surrendered actually, and were hands up for many hours, they brought down their hands, started pulling the victims from the tarmac, throwing them in the back of the trucks. When they came back, my wife was not, as you have seen on the screen, shouting, giving me back my wedding ring. She was lying flat in the back of a truck, unable even to talk and even to turn herself. I took her to the room where she stayed for many weeks, even unable to move. Many other times, people do ask me, but Paul, have you ever been sad in your life? Yes. On July the 12th, 1984, just almost a week after the 100 days, or the 3 months of the genocide, my wife, a friend, and myself decided to drive south and go where we belong to, our homeland. That was our first real trip outside Kigali, the capital, to see how the country looked like. All along the way, the whole country was smearing death. All along the way, there was no human being alive. All along the way, we could see all over many a lot of times. There was no animal alive. We could hear dogs barking from the background very far. We drove up to my homeland. When we arrived, I was lucky enough, even now I call it to be lucky, because my elder brother was there. I went to his house, started asking him, but where are our neighbors? Where is so-and-so? He started telling me that, listen, so-and-so have been killed by militia men. Others have been killed by the army. Others are being killed by rebels who had already taken over the country. Others are burning, they are being burnt in those houses you can see burning there. That time, my elder sister, my younger brother, had just been killed by the rebels. That's it. I drove, my brother at a given time looked at me and told me that, Paul, please do me a favor, leave this place. Because if you don't, even these walls you can see and these books have got eyes and ears. They do listen to what you're saying. They are looking at you. Please, leave this place. I recorded his message. We drove down south to see my mother-in-law. When we arrived, before we arrived even, her two houses had just been destroyed. She had been killed with her daughter-in-law, six grandchildren, all of them thrown in a pit where we used to mature bananas in order to make banana juices and banana beers. That day, we sat down in the ruins, and then, like young babies, we cried. We cried, and we drove after a few hours. We drove back to Kigali, where we stayed, until a time when I was almost assassinated, almost killed, in September 1996, and fled the country, went to Belgium, where I live until today. That day, I was very sad. Had we learned a lesson to you? Have we learned a lesson? All of that was taking place in Rwanda. Last year, I went to Darfur myself to see what is going on in Darfur. Exactly what I was seeing in Rwanda between 1990 and 1994 is what is going on in the Sudan. In Rwanda, by 1994, the day before the genocide, we had more than 1 million people surrounding Kigali who had fled the rebels, because the rebels were inviting men for meetings, killing them, inviting their sons to join their army, killing them. So the people had been fleeing the zones they occupied. And by 1994, early before the genocide, we had more than 1 million surrounding Kigali without shelter, without food, without water, without education for the future generations. For 4 years, those people had been frustrated just like that. And when the genocide broke out, they were the first ones to take machetes, go down to the streets, and chop each and everyone into pieces. Today in Darfur, we have more than 2 million people in the same situation. In Darfur, their government helicopters are just destroying villages completely, and a few individuals who happen just to flee the burning villages are being killed by the Janjaweed militia men on horses, again armed by a gunman, just like the Rwandan militia who were just hunting us, killing many people by 1993. And again, the whole world is standing by, watching, and doesn't do anything. When their children saw us, when we were there, they just gathered and demonstrated. When they were demonstrating, they had a blackboard on which they had written, "Welcome to our guests, but we need education." Is that not a shame to mankind? Have we learned a lesson? I'll wind up my speech tonight, and the ordinary men will take over. We stand before ahead of me and go further than I. I'm now open to some questions. Thank you. Well,
can you repeat the question?
She's asking me, telling me that today in Rwanda, we are no more Hutus or Tutsis. We are all of us Rwandans. It is just like telling me that I'm no more black. She's no more a white. We are all of us Americans. I believe that the most important thing is to be proud of what and who we are, and then respect others. To know that our freedom ends where our neighbor's freedom starts. We should know what we are allowed to do and what we are not allowed to do. And what we need, rather, is to sit down around the table and talk, then saying just arbitrary that you are no more black, you are no more white. To me, that is not the best solution. Because even if me, you can just intimidate me and make me say, yes, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, you will never intimidate the future generations. So I think the best solution is to dare to face our responsibilities and sit down and talk. Yes?
Has anything changed in the 10 years in terms of you had Rwanda in 1994 and now you have Darfur? Do you see any difference? Anything being done?
Has anything changed where? She's asking me whether anything has changed. Where? In Rwanda or in Darfur?
In terms of helping you out, in terms of other governments, anything?
Well, our wish, this is my wish, is to get all the Rwandans around the table. We know what is going wrong. We know what has been going wrong ever. Hutus and Tutsis do not hate each other as people might think. Even now when we are talking, for sure there are many people who are just preparing weddings, intermarriage weddings between Hutus and Tutsis for tomorrow, Saturday. For sure. 100%. So people, Hutus and Tutsis, do not hate each other. Only bad leaders always divide and conquer. So nothing so far has changed, unfortunately. What we need from the government is for the international community, actually, is to take all the Rwandan people around the table. Let us, first of all, talk about justice. Because justice is not being done. And then after justice, reconcile. And then only we will. Because otherwise, if we continue in the sense we are doing things, we are building on the sand. Yes? Yeah.
The world is in trouble. Nations are in trouble. People are hungry. They should not be hungry. Why isn't the United Nations doing something about this?
Well, our question is this. The world is in trouble. Many people are dying of hunger. Even in Rwanda, there's an SOS Rwanda.
Darfur.
In Darfur, people are dying.
In the United States.
Then, why does the international community, the United Nations, not do anything to solve such a trouble? Well, to the best of my knowledge, myself, I do not really trust the United Nations. Because the United Nations have shown to be a failure. I'll give you an example. In 1993, after the peace accords of Arusha, among the Rwandan people to share power, the United Nations brought in 2,500 soldiers. But when things became very serious, when people took machetes and went down to chop each other people into pieces, we saw the international community, the United Nations, just pulling out, abandoning a whole nation. If you were in my place, you wouldn't trust them either. They had 2,500 soldiers. They left us with 260 poor African soldiers who were just standing there in uniforms without a gun, without any weapon, just in a uniform. A UN soldier is someone who can stand there, watch what is going on, and in the end say, ah, sorry, we have seen them killing each other. That is the United Nations. But let me go a little bit further. Yeah.
What do you think the United States should be doing about Sudan?
I think that the United States should send a strong message to the Sudanese government. Tell the Sudanese leaders that they are not untouchable. They can also one day face history, face justice. Those guys are not untouchable. They are not above rules and regulations. They are people like any other ones. Those guys have stolen enough money. This money is in the Western countries' banks. Why the United States, the US government, should ask all the countries where they keep money, where they have bought castles, to freeze all their goods and their money. And this would be a strong message to all the African dictators who have been killing their own people, who have been stealing their own countries, bringing that money to the West. If that is done, no one will kill anymore, because people will feel that they are also accountable. Behind there. Yes, you? Sorry? No, I don't believe in that. Okay, there.
I just wanted to say that it seems like the UN has finally gotten their act together, at least in Congo, the DRC, fighting, disarming some of the militias that include some of the Hutu that were fighting in Rwanda. But I wanted to ask a question about Paul Kagame and whether you thought that he was consolidating power now in a way that makes Rwanda vulnerable in the way that it was before.
We actually, from the president of Rwanda today, we expect much more. Not something to show to the international community, but to do a lot to his own people. To do a lot to his own people is today. Call the civil society. What I call the civil society is you and I, religious people, peasants on the hills, because 90% of the population in Rwanda are peasants. Call them around the table, let them sit down, and then negotiate deal. That is what we expect from him, but not him imposing things. We do not need anyone who imposes his own views. We need to be involved. We want to get involved. We want equal rights to all the citizens of Rwanda. And so far, we are far from there. Yes?
Why do you think Mali's managed to create a democracy when Burkina Faso and
had the pirate running their government and driving all these other whores.
Mali?
Yeah.
Well, she's asking me, why do I think that Mali has managed to deal, to do things in democracy? Mali is one of the African countries. But it is not only that one. There are some other few countries, like Senegal. Senegal has been doing well. It is a democratic country. That is to tell us that democracy is also possible in Africa. Botswana has managed. They have made it. In Tanzania, they have made it. They have a democracy. A president comes. He can only campaign twice, and that's it. They are extremists from both sides, from the Tutsi side. Because as I said earlier, all of those people in Byumba and Ruhengeri in the north, where 80% of the population are just widows, women, because their husbands have been invited for meetings and killed, because their sons have been invited to join the rebels' army and killed, they were killed by Tutsis. In 1994, during the genocide, I did not see, but I know, because it happened, 6 bishops being killed with a lot of priests and many other people, crowds of people, by the Tutsi army. I saw many people being locked into their houses, including the former vice governor of the province where I come from, of Gitarama, who was locked in his house in the night with his children, his wife, his visitors, and everything and everybody locked in the house. The rebels' army poured on the house, oil, and burnt the whole house. In 1995, April, a year after the 100 days, the army, the new Rwandan army, the rebels who took over, destroyed a refugee camp in the south of Rwanda. They brought helicopters, started destroying the refugee camp. All the people fleeing the refugee camp were being killed by soldiers on the ground with machine guns. 8,500 people died in that refugee camp. Those people were killed. During the 100 days, Hutus killed also Tutsis. But those Hutus, 100,000 of them, are in prisons. Whereas all of those Tutsis who killed from 1990 up to even now, because even now there are many people who get lost, who disappear. All of those people who killed are just moving free. They are free, just like wind. They are moving all over the world. No one can touch them, because they have been the winners. And the winner always writes history. Just one more question. Somewhere behind there. Yes.
Oh, me?
Yeah, you.
Actually, I read recently that Tutsi women outnumbered the men in Rwanda 7-1, and the women are coming to power in Rwanda. How do you think that, what chance do they have to govern?
That is a very good idea, to bring women to power. Since they are even the majority, I do agree with it. But I would agree much more if people were elected, not nominated. There are no free elections in Rwanda.
Or in the United States.
See. This was the last question. Thank you very, very much. Thank you.
honor to have a man of such courage and conviction and wisdom here. I'm just, you know, delighted.